Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Cinema Sommelier, the season finale episode. I am Gary T. Moore.
And I'm Zachary Wachaleski, and today we're going to talk about Michael Dowse's 8-Bit Christmas. Michael Dowse's 8-Bit Christmas in our season finale around the time of Christmas, not necessarily Christmas just yet, but it is a perfect movie to watch this week for Christmas. It follows a father telling his daughter about a story of how he wanted a Nintendo Entertainment System back in the late 80s. It's essentially a Christmas story, but just redone in the 80s, and has, I mean, June Diane Raphael as the mother of a young Neil Patrick Harris character, and Steve Zahn as the father, and a bunch of his friends and his sister basically going on these adventures to go and try to find a way to get a Nintendo Entertainment System. And Neil Patrick Harris is currently telling the story to his daughter, who is begging him for a phone, and he's saying, "No, I'll tell you why," and then goes on this long How I Met Your Mother-esque story mode of like, here's what happened back in the late 80s. And it's just a fun adventure story, and it's a good twist on a normal Christmas movie that I think you'd watch with your family.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it is based on the book of the same name by Kevin Jacobowski. I hope I'm not butchering that.
I get it.
Yeah, I do apologize if I am butchering that. But I believe he also wrote the screenplay for this, which gives me a lot of hope. I hate it when like they're like based on the book this, but like the writer had nothing to do with anything. It's just like very loosely based. But this I imagine is pretty true to the book. I might actually read the book because I really like the content of the movie.
Right. Yeah. Speaking of the screenplay, actually, I found this in just like searching through like IMDb facts about it, but there's this like site, or I guess like a server called like the Blacklist, which has like a bunch of like screenwriters and stuff that can put up their screenplays on this thing, and it gets the attention of people who want to produce a movie. And so this was actually one of the best screenplays that was up there, or one of the most liked ones back in 2019. So I think that's part of how this movie came to be. So I think to your point of like having it just be a really good screenplay, I think that was the case. And that's how this movie essentially came to be in the end. And I mean, I loved it. I thought it was very quirky, very fun. I think some of the dialogue, like it really did throw back to the 80s. I was born in the 90s, so I guess I can't really be too strong of a voice to the 80s, but I thought it was really a good, fun movie to watch. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to say that I was a child of the 80s, and technically, yes, I guess I was, if November 1988 is any consolation to that.
That's when this movie basically takes place.
That's true, and it felt like it. No, I really like the fact that, you know, by the way, before we get into anything, spoiler alert, this is pretty new. It came out the 24th of November. It is a great movie to watch with your family. There's no crazy bad language or anything like that. Right. Nothing like Call Me By Your Name. this is good. I would willingly sit down and watch this again with my family, I think.
And there is a very, like, there's a lot of twists and turns as this goes on that we will spoil. Like, this is one of those movies that, like, there's a lot to spoil in it. So if there's something that you do want to watch with your family, I recommend just listen to this after Christmas. Listen to this after you watch the movie, because I would hate to give it away.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But we meet the family. We meet the main family, Neil Patrick Harris's family, when he was a kid in 1988, and they're in Chicago, and they're not wealthy, right? They're not like they're getting by. Their mom is a teacher who is like has all these different, you know, ways of saving and making money, and the dad is I never really got what the dad did. I know he does
perpetually working on their house. Like,
I think that's how he earns his money. But he's played by Steve Zahn, who I love. Steve Zahn is so good. Yeah, but you see him always just like, you know, doing the dad thing, not finishing tasks around the house and stuff like that. And that really sets it up. It sets it up very quickly that no, you're not going to get a Nintendo, and that's the whole voyage of this movie, right? That's right. The whole. They go to the friend's house, who's the rich kid in town, who's got the cool basement, who has a Nintendo. Which I think I know I had one of those kids in my neighborhood because we were definitely not the rich kids. Right. We had the kid that's like, oh, maybe we'll go to so and so's house, and if they're playing, maybe we can also play the Super Nintendo or the NES. Because yes, this takes place in the 80s, but this was my life in the 90s.
Right.
Because we didn't have money. Same. So it was just like, this is what you get. And, you know, you're 5, 6, 7, 8 years old. You don't know or really care about next gen consoles. It's like, this is right. What is going to happen. But I thought this movie had a lot of heart.
Yeah.
Definitely some very quotable characters and quotable lines as well. We were talking briefly before. You said you had some quotes.
That
you wrote down, or
I mean, there are definitely a lot of quotes. I feel like they made this very nostalgic 80s, and we've had movies that are like, this is just going to be a nostalgia bomb, and like, is it going to pay off in the fact that it's nostalgia? But I think the quotes of this, like, just felt very like cheesy Christmas movie-esque, right? Yeah. Like at one point he was leaving the friend's house and they're like, oh no, we're never going to be able to go back to this house. And he said, it was the endo of Nintendo. And I'm just like, like, it just seems like stuff that you would read in a Christmas card, which kind of fits like the time element of like it being a Christmas movie, but also it's like just like a cheesy 80s movie.
Yeah.
And then I just loved when they were at the kid's house and he was like talking to his mom on like the little like house intercom thing. And he's just like, does anyone else want Pop-Tarts? He's like, Ma, Pop-Tarts. And it just really threw me back to like, Ma, the meatloaf. And I just like really, I lost it in that moment. And like, it wasn't even like a reference to that, but it just kind of reminded me of that just like rich, but like also kind of just like very dependent on his parents type of person.
1000%. Absolutely. I had, they weren't really Christmassy. I think I wrote down two. There was a quote, it said, it's just me, Connor. I'm not really a lion. Connor was introduced as this, one of the main characters, like nerdy at school friends. Who was he played by? Jacob Laval, I guess. He's just this nerdy kid, which is one of Jake Doyle, played by Winslow, Fegley's character. But he's one of his nerdy at school friends, and really some good. I think they did a really good job of spreading the needed, wanted comic relief. I mean,
yeah.
It wasn't like a down and out story. It was fun.
Was he the kid who was just hanging out behind the dumpster with him?
Yes, he was.
Yeah. Oh, he was my spirit animal. Like if I could choose, if I had a spirit animal, like I would want it to be him. Like he's also the guy who like later was like, just think of something happy. Tell me your favorite letters of the alphabet. In order, mine are T, K, A, I. He just starts like rattling off the letters of the alphabet. And I'm like,
so good.
He's not in there to drive plot. He's just in there to be fun.
Yeah.
So yeah, absolutely. No, his role was fantastic.
But he's dressed as a lion and he said, it's just me, Connor. I'm not really a lion. And just the clarification, I was just like, this is brilliant. I think I literally laughed out loud. And I think the dad, Steve Zahn's character at one time says, if life was fair, it would be a fair. And I really like that. And I'm just like, this is ridiculous. It's one of those things that like your parents just said, they thought they had something powerful and meaningful. And it's just like, oh, that is absolutely absurd and ridiculous.
I mean, it's like he started the sentence and he's like, I don't know where I'm going with this. And then just finished it and just like tried to make it a thing. Like our listeners will know that we definitely do the same thing. We just start talking. We're like, oh yeah. And then this just derails into something else.
I think this whole podcast has been that example.
Right.
But no, I don't know where to begin. That's why I'm kind of jumping all around.
No, I mean, I think the quotes are probably the most memorable to me. And like, it's what most of my notes are filled with. Like, it really just emulates the entire essence of what that movie wants to be. It wants to be an 80s nostalgia trip. It wants to be this like outside of Chicago. There's times where they're like making fun of like Wisconsin people. And he's like, oh man, Wisconsin plates. Of course they're bad drivers. And then he's like later, he's like, oh, Packers fan, get out of the way. Like stuff like that. Or like it really, you can tell that this entire movie is based in whether it's Kevin Jacobowski's life or not, it's based in factual stuff.
Yes.
Like it's based in something that has absolutely happened in someone's world. Even if I haven't lived in Chicago, I can relate to it. I can feel what they're trying to go for there.
Yeah, and I think that everyone's been through that. I can remember, you know, riding with my mom or dad as a kid and like, oh, right. Freaking Virginia drivers can't take a break. You know, whatever. And I think everyone had those random, you know, behind the, maybe not as extreme as hiding behind the dumpster, but like those really weird kids that you were just like, what is this kid going to say next?
Right. Like, or the purple boots. And like, you're like, oh man, I really can't let anybody see my purple boots right now. Like my mom got them on sale. It was a coupon, like, but I had to wear them.
I had to. Yeah.
Everyone has those moments.
Yeah. I will say, and everyone has this kid in their life. Probably my favorite character, Jeff Farmer,
yes.
The liar, he is just incredible.
Yeah.
It's just and he's also extremely talented. What's this kid's name? Max Malice. Max Malice, if you're listening to this, I don't know how you would, but like if you're listening to this, like kudos, kid. Like your timing is perfect. It's so good.
We'll at him on the Instagram post just to make sure he listens.
Yeah, we'll do that. but yeah, I thought he did fantastic. Because everything he said, because you know, you can give a kid a funny line, right? And sometimes they won't understand the humor behind it, and it'll just kind of be said, or maybe you'll have to get speaking as a director of theater, not as a film, of course. But sometimes, like some directors will give the kid a line reading, which I hate doing. But I don't feel like this kid got line readings at all. I feel like this kid at 8, 9, 10, 11, I don't know how old he is, got the script and was like, all right, I'm going to crush it today. And just like delivered this top notch. This is going to be what people look back on in 15 years and be like, oh my God, remember Max Malice? He was in 8-Bit Christmas with Neil Patrick Harris. Like, I think this is going to be his jumping off point.
I completely agree. I feel like that in the acting in this movie, there isn't a lot to be said about it. Like it's not the thing that jumps out to me. I think he's one of them. Obviously, I think June Diane Raphael and Steve Zahn are fantastic. And Neil Patrick Harris really doesn't have a lot to do in the movie. Like he's just narrating most of the time. And I think his delivery is exactly what you would expect from him. But I think, yeah, of the kids and of the hijinks, like most of the kids just have kind of like a bit of a deadpan element. Like they don't have a lot of emotion as they're delivering it, but he's the one who's just like, yeah, he does. And I think, I completely agree. Of the kids, I think he's the by far the best one.
Yeah. So let's go into the story really quick.
Yeah.
So this whole movie, of course, if you couldn't tell from the title, is that this kid wants and needs a Nintendo Entertainment System. Jake Doyle needs a Nintendo Entertainment System, and he's willing to go to any lengths at all to get one. Even more than Neil Patrick Harris's present-day daughter wants a cell phone. Personally, I think at this point, like, cell phones are in need, but whatever. Get her a jitterbug. I don't know. but anyway, so he's willing to go to any lengths, and he tries and fails multiple times. And honestly, I was like, what's going to go wrong in his final plan? So they crack this big, elaborate plan after not getting it from anyone for Christmas.
His Ocean's friends, 14, you know?
That's exactly what it is.
That's what it was, yeah.
So they're going on this field trip to the art museum. And he's like, okay, the nerd friend is allergic to SpaghettiOs. And so if he eats SpaghettiOs, he's going to spew everywhere. One of my notes is he SpaghettiOed all over her. The force behind those SpaghettiOs.
You had to aim it at the teacher, too? Like, why?
Right? Right?
And what kind of rude kid knows he's going to puke and decides to do it on a person?
Just, I mean, look, they're trying to buy time. While he goes into the mall, buys this with the money that they have from sports cards, and he gets it, he has it in his hand, and then, like you see at the very beginning of the movie with Neil Patrick Harris's character, he, as a younger child, slips on the ice, and the NES lands smack dab in the middle of the road. And I'm like, no, they're still saving it. And then it gets crushed.
Yep.
And it hurt me because that's so much money.
Like, it was, especially to them. Like, they're selling their baseball cards to get it. Like, they had this whole thing. They put so much work and effort into it. And like, they deserved it at that point. Like, you're definitely cheering for them to be like, you guys really didn't do anything wrong here.
No, I mean,
besides maybe skipping out on your field trip, but like, you guys put in a lot of effort.
They didn't technically skip out on the field trip. They put a hiatus on.
That's fair. They just delayed their destination a little bit longer.
Yeah, exactly. According to this article, it says when the NES first released in 1985, it was way beyond anything else on the market that was launched at the time. It was launched at F.E.O. Schwartz in New York City and got the attention of many people. It retailed from about $179 to $199.
Which that is crazy.
I couldn't, when I was his age, I could not imagine that money. My parents were not going to spend that money. I completely understand. I get it.
Right. Like, I mean, the dad's even spending like, what, $70 or $60, whatever it was, on a Cabbage Patch doll. It's like stuff like that where I'm just like, man, I'm just thinking of how much money that is in the 80s. It's only been, I mean, like what, 40 years since the early 80s? And I'm like, inflation has been crazy. So it's been like 35 years or so since when Cabbage Patch and NES came out. So for it to be that expensive is, I mean, I guess not as crazy compared to modern day consoles, but also modern day consoles are way more advanced and have a lot more technical stuff in them. So this is insane.
The way I sold my dad on my PS3, granted, I still got it late. The way I sold him, I'm like, Dad, look, it's not only a game system, but it's got a DVD and Blu-ray player. So like, I don't need any of that except for this entertainment system. And
it's got the combo deal. Doesn't have a power glove, I'll tell you that.
No, the power glove. I am glad I didn't live through I was there for the era, but I'm glad that fizzled out. Because it's such a cool concept.
Right.
But apparently it just sucked.
Yep. Which they definitely throw that into the movie of just like how much there were so many things that were hyped in the technology because it was just coming in onto the scene in the 80s, right? Like NES being like one of the first big systems and then having the power glove, having these added on things. And it's just like, this is garbage. Like we just made this, we could make more money off of you. It's just great. It's a good, going back to the nostalgia bomb, a good reference to like what it was actually like living in the 80s for those like us who didn't actually live through that time and have that rise and defeat when it actually was horrible.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I will say I related a lot to the family. As I've said it before, we had that van. Ours was blue. Ours was a blue van. There was this time where this little girl asked Santa a question about the chimney. I will say this really quick. Friday night, I ended up being a Santa Claus interpreter, if you will, for a Lights Up Downtown event in Valdez, North Carolina. And I got that same question. So I was like, I feel your pain. I forgot exactly what it was. I think it was like, how do you get in the house if you don't have a chimney? Luckily I had some glitter with me and we used that, but I'm trying to think of like negatives. I think I will say one negative thing about the movie is I think that the turn at the end almost blindsides you too much.
Okay.
And I think that they for it to be a movie about, you know, the 8-bit system,
right,
and then having the main story revolve around it, and then, spoiler alert, not acquiring it.
Right.
That year or whatever, I think that was a little bit of like,
It's a bait and switch for sure. Like,
it is.
It's one of those, like, I don't have an issue with it, because to me, being a Christmas movie, this is already, I mean, it's very unoriginal. Like, this has happened before. This movie exists in other spaces, but it has the heart of what Christmas should be to it. And the whole overarching message goes back to Neil Patrick Harris trying to explain what he came to with his family in the whole process of him really wanting the NES. So if you think about it that way, it never really leaves that message. You just get so invested in all of the hijinks and the schemes that to me, it kind of detracts from the family movie that it is. Right. So I completely get it. And I see it that way too, that like, it really does drastically shift in the last 20 minutes of the movie.
Yeah. Oh my God.
And I also think the last 20 minutes of the movie, if we could just go there now, were incredibly emotional because of it. Because I 100%. Think it lulls 100%. You into this sleep of like, oh, it's just the hijinks. It's going to be one of those movies. And like, when is he going to actually get the NES? And like, they keep like sort of dangling that carrot in front of you. And then eventually they just pull the carrot out completely. And they're just like, boom. It's just about the kid's relationship with his parents, or his parent in this case, of just like the son's relationship to the father. And both of us have obviously this like strong emotion towards our fathers. So it really hit home with me. I'm assuming it 100%. Did for you as well.
Absolutely. Right. Yeah.
Right. Just straight up waterworks at the end of this movie. So
yeah, I was like, okay, yeah, sure. Yeah. But,
I wish you'd have just gotten the NES. I didn't want to see this.
Right.
Right.
I will say, I do like the way they presented it at the back, like, or at the end of the movie, rather, right, where he's like, you know, he's going on this little quest and is like, you know, make sure. And he alludes to it earlier. The dad alludes to it earlier. Like, don't worry about the, because we didn't mention this.
Behind the shed.
They have a dog and the dog poops everywhere. Like, this dog poops so much. And his dad was like, you know what, don't worry about picking up behind the shed. I'll handle that. And you're like, oh, that's a cool little thing or whatever. That's nice of him. Right. And then later on, his dad's like, make sure you get behind the shed. And it's like, what? And then you see this dad who has not been able to finish a project at all. Like, since this kid was born, the house has, like, tarp and everything all over it. Finishes him this gorgeous, awesome treehouse.
Right.
And it's just like, oh my God, like the power of family and love and devotion. It's like, what are you doing to my emotions right now? Right. But it was, it was very, very heartwarming. I did kind of agree with Neil Patrick Harris's daughter, like, was the NES in there? Like, was...
Right. No, I did the same thing. I was just like, is he going to find it in here still? There's still the carrot that you're like waiting to be like, when? When is it?
But he doesn't. But then you find out at the end of the movie, it's both his daughter's favorite place to visit when they're at his grandma's house, and his favorite place to visit. And then you see like the old pictures from like that year and all his friends, and it's him finally finding something to do with his dad.
Right.
And then because you know, they're on two very different planes, as a lot of kids are, like a lot of adolescents are with their dads. It's like,
right.
Cause you're both kind of like, I imagine at that age, a dad is trying to figure out how exactly to navigate having a teen son or whatever.
Right.
And the son is like coming into their own, and the fact that they find that woodworking together or building stuff together, you know, outlet for them. I think it's awesome. I think it's really good.
I think it's really incredible, especially thinking like, I mean, it made me think of like all of my memories with my dad, and like my dad built me a treehouse in upstate New York when I was growing up, and like there's all of those things. But it really does emphasize and hit home just how hard it is to be a parent in general, but also like a parent who grew up outside of a digital age and is now raising children in a digital age. And I feel like that was always a hard disconnect, and it extended beyond the 80s into 90s and 2000s. Like, having somebody who you're like, I don't know if I should do this. And like, at this point in the digital age that we live in, you don't know if a kid should have a phone at an early age, because you didn't have a phone back then.
That's true. Yeah.
Right. So like, it really alludes a lot back to just that parenting dynamic of being like, I don't know. Like, it's hard, and I'm going to say no to you now, but like, maybe I should give you a phone, or maybe I should give you a GameCube in my case, or an Xbox in today's world. Like, there's just so many things. So I think it was really just, it was a good message to Christmas of like, the family is the thing that matters the most. And like, their Christmas, they did have a good time. He got the treehouse, which is a much better, much more sentimental and emotional gift. And it made me much more emotional as well. So,
kudos
to the end.
I think that if he would have gotten, at least in the treehouse, if he would have gotten the NES, it only would have been a side prize anyway, you know?
Right.
And so the fact that they went back and said, oh no, I had to work all summer for that, or whatever it was, it was just like, okay. It kind of made you like, yes, you wanted him to have it the entire time.
Right.
And yes, you were on this journey, but I guess the fact that it didn't come to fruition the way you wanted it to was almost more rewarding.
Right.
Because it extended the journey just that much more. And it gave you a nice button to the journey with the treehouse.
Yeah.
And then just like going around when it's Neil Patrick Harris, going around and looking around his mom's house without his dad there, seeing like their initials on stuff. It's just like, They together built that house, and it's fantastic. Yeah.
And that's the point of Christmas. Like, as much as Christmas has been commercialized in gifts, and like, the more and more we go into the day and age where technology exists and there's a lot of things to buy, like, it's important to, and I was thinking about it as I was watching it. It's like, they're recording their family opening up presents. And like, I was that kid growing up who was just like, man, please don't put me on camera. Like, I really, and it's funny that now we're talking on a podcast about movies and I've been in a movie, but like, at that point I was like, no, bah humbug, leave me alone.
Yeah.
And I really like, you only get so many Christmases with your family, and it's just really important to spend them. And that's why I'm very grateful for all of our listeners and everyone here, you, Gary, especially. So Merry Christmas. It's important to go tell somebody Merry Christmas this year.
Absolutely. Yes. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. This has been a fun, very fun ride. And I absolutely look forward to season two. However, that is going to go. It'll happen. It'll happen. Maybe we'll have that intro down by season two.
Maybe we'll have an outro down by season two.
But before we go, we have to rate this thing.
We do. Let's do it.
Compare it to a wine. I'll let you go first.
Yeah. I mean, so this movie, I like I said, it feels very unoriginal in 90% of the movie. Like, if it ended with just, he got the present, I would probably be less enthused about it. But with the emotional twist at the end, and with it just really hitting home to me, especially as I was watching it, it really resonated. So I'm going to give it a pretty high score. I think I'm going to give it 86. Like, I think it's definitely one of those, like, I would watch again. I would definitely watch again next year. And for a Christmas movie, like, that's something, like, that's powerful. You don't really need to do much for a Christmas movie for it to be all that great. Like, usually it's just you put pretty people in winter and they fall in love. This really throws that completely out. And I thought that it was just pretty, pretty special. So, as ununique as special can get, but was still pretty special. And in terms of a wine, I mean, I can't even really think of anything spectacular, but like, it really just makes me want to like cozy up and drink some like mulled wine on a couch in the winter. Okay. Like, I would rather compare this to like a hot chocolate. Like, I don't even think it's necessarily a wine. I think it's very Christmas staple and just makes you feel good, makes you feel warm inside, whether that's mulled wine, whether that's hot chocolate with something else splashed inside of it. I don't know, but it's something that's just going to make you feel warm and fuzzy on the inside at the end.
Okay. Yeah, no, that was perfect. I agree with everything you said. I think that this is, you know, It's not a Hallmark movie, thank God.
Yeah.
But it does have like the spirit that like Jingle All the Way does. It's got the spirit that like all of my go-to kitschy, ridiculous Christmas movies go to, you know. It has those staples, and I love that. Like, this might be a yearly thing for me, and I would, if we were home for the holidays and somebody's like, what do you guys want to watch? I'd be like, hey, put this on, it's fun, right?
Right.
I am going to give it, I will give it an 88.
Okay.
In honor of the year that it took place.
That's
and
fair.
The journey, and it was my birth year. So it gets an 88. As far as wines are concerned, I'm not comparing it to a wine, but instead, because it has a lot to do with dads, I'm going to compare it to an Old Milwaukee, which is what my dad drank. Yes. When I was super young. I never liked the smell or whatever of it, but it reminds me of my dad. So it is an Old Milwaukee for the win.
That is perfect. Yeah. I absolutely love that. And congrats on us for finishing up our first season of Cinema Somalia. It has been a blast.
It's been so much fun.
And thank you to the listeners, as many of you as there may or may not be. Thank you for listening. This has really just been a fun and awesome journey and experience for us to just be able to talk about movies, you know?
Yeah. Thank you to Rachel and Mariah, who have been... And you and I would say I haven't edited
and for
a,
you.
I haven't edited a single piece of this, but for editing us, and Rachel and Mariah for keeping us, you know, in the parameters that we need to stay in, as far as like time and topics are concerned.
Can't do it without the editors and our guests from earlier in the season. If those people are still listening, thank you for coming on and being a part of season one, and hopefully we'll have you back for season two.
Thank you guys from the bottom of our hearts collectively for making this at least a little something. And I hope you guys, you know, listen to this on your commute back home, listen to this driving to or from college or work or wherever. Be safe out there. Have a crazy happy holiday, and we'll catch you guys in 2022. Oh, that's weird.
Yeah, happy holidays and happy new year to those we don't see before then.
Yeah. So for Cinema Sommelier, the season finale, I am Gary T. Moore.
And I'm Zachary Wasileski. See you next year.
We'll see you next year.